very familiar musical form in the 18th century, Concerto Grosso. That was the fourth, and it was in the key of G minor by Alessandro Scarlatti. Europa Galante was led by their founder. It was Fabio Biondi, who also is their lead violinist. Awfully glad to have your company on this June 6th, this Saturday. Hope you're doing well and enjoy your weekend.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Thank you for being here and for enjoying this lovely classical programming. Some other shows that you might like to try out here at WHFR include every Monday afternoon from 2 until 4 p.m. It's called Big Band with Dan, some of the greatest big band programming that you will ever want to hear, taking you back to those days gone by. Again, Big Band with Dan, Monday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. right here on WHFR. Also, Fridays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m., we present The World of Big Band with Bill Wright. You'll enjoy this so much as well. The World of Big Band, Fridays, 10 a.m. until 1 p.m., right here on WHFR. And of course, if you're tuning in for Big Band on Fridays, stay tuned for another hour in the 1 o'clock time slot. It's the new WHFR Journal. Local news and views at their best. All sorts of great programming here on WHFR. Check them out. Thanks for tuning in.
Once upon a time, long ago and far away, I lived in Scotland.
Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. You know, if UFOs are real, our government and military would certainly know about it. And there would be a plethora of government documentation on the matter. Well, in fact, there is. And much of it is available to the American public for the asking through the Freedom of Information Act. Now, John Greenwald of California, John Greenwald Jr., has amassed thousands of government documents detailing investigations into UFOs straight from the government files, and has displayed them on his Black Vault website. He has done so since he was 15 years old. His site is sometimes referred to as the motherlode of official government UFOs and UFO-related documents. And John has gone on to become a TV producer for shows like the History Channel's UFO Files, and presently is the writer and producer of the highly successful UFO Hunters with Bill Burns. And he is also an author and has lectured all over the world and has been interviewed on countless radio and TV programs and documentaries, as well as hosting his own web talk show on the Black Vault Radio Network. And we are honored to have him on the line with us today. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thanks, Dave. It's an honor to be here. I really appreciate it.
The honor's all ours, believe me. You've been doing this since you were 15 years old, is that right?
That's right, yeah. I started when I was 15.
And you set up the Black Vault, and tell us what we can expect to find on the Black Vault.
Sure. Well, you know, when I first started it, when I was 15, to be honest with you, I had absolutely no idea what it would turn into. And when I first started it, it was really just a depository of government documents scanned online, put onto the Internet, and that's what it started as. But what it grew into is this extremely large, dedicated group of people from around the globe that have joined the site, free to join, joined the site, have come online, and really just come together and not only talk about the documents, but talk about the paranormal and talk about all the aspects of the UFO phenomena. And it really is just this phenomenal community. And when you log on today, it was just recently redesigned. You'll find about 500,000 pages of declassified government documents. But on top of all
half,
of that...
Half a million,
yeah. So it's getting up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry?
I just chuckled at that. I mean, that's something.
It is. And you know, it's getting bigger every day. I've got literally hundreds of open Freedom of Information Act requests throughout every corner of the government. So there's a lot of documents coming. But the Black Vault is not only that. I mean, it's a massive archive of government documents, again, but when it comes down to it, it's just this community of like-minded people from around the world. So you can speak to thousands of people and read, you know, tens of thousands of message forum posts, and it's a pretty massive undertaking, but that's what it's grown into today.
Right. Now, what kind of documents are we talking about here?
Well, I do deal with... almost every government secret and conspiracy that anybody can dream up. But what really is the number one and has been since day number one is the UFO phenomena, documents on UFOs specifically. Now, not all 500,000 are on UFOs. I deal with other things like nuclear weapons, biological weapons, chemical weapons, the JFK assassination. I mean, it's a very long list of categories. But always the number one and most popular is the UFO topic.
Yeah.
And so that that really is what the site is known for. But again, there's a lot to find there.
Right. Okay, now are all of these documents that you have on display for people to read, are all of them as a result of the Freedom of Information Act request, or are some of them leaked documents, or what?
No, they are 100% obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. I don't take away anything from the leaked documents and the excellent research like Dr. Bob Wood and other select few researchers who really look into the leaked documents. But for me, there's just still a level of doubt. And so what I do is I strictly deal with government documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. And the key is that, and I've been accused a lot over the years of fabricating a lot of these documents, and I can only help but laugh because that's how I know I'm making a difference in this field, and that's how I know what I'm finding is something unbelievable because people are accusing me of fabricating the documents. But when it comes down to it, 100% of your listeners, no matter what country they live in, can actually go on and request the information from the U.S. government, and they'll get it. They'll get the same exact documentation that I got. Anybody can do it. And so that's a key to understanding when you log on to the Black Vault and you see all these government documents, they are 100% real and anybody can verify it. You don't have to take my word for it.
So when they accuse you of having faked the document, you just say, well, go here or go there and wherever it was you got it from and get a copy for yourself, right?
That's exactly right. And in some cases you can get it for free. In other cases I had to pay sometimes hundreds of dollars for the material to be released to me, and that's just one of the stipulations under the Freedom of Information Act is that they can charge for the information.
True.
So, you know, if they want to pay, go right ahead. What I do is, you know, and I learned this when I was very young, when you wait months and sometimes years for a document to come, when you log on to the Black Vault, you can download it in seconds or minutes, depending upon how big the file is.
Right.
And you don't have to wait, and you don't have to pay. But if anybody wants to do it, by all means.
Yeah.
And on a quick side story, when it comes to waiting for the documents, you may not think that you'd have to wait a whole long time or maybe 4 or 5 months. That's not true. I actually published an article that got quite a bit of press about a year ago, and I received a document in the mail in response to a FOIA request I had filed nearly 11 years prior to the document coming to my mailbox. And talk about waiting, 11 years, you know? I mean, that's insane.
Yeah. Now, I thought our government has said that they haven't been studying UFOs since 1969, Project Blue Book.
Well, that's what they lead you to believe, Dave, but I'm kind of here to tell you that that's absolutely not true. Mm. And this is a very black and white, very easy to prove lie that they're really giving out.
Mm.
The short of the story is exactly how you said it. With Project Blue Book, they closed it in 1969, and they said there is absolutely no government investigation or military agency looking into the UFO phenomena.
Right.
And when you look at the documentations, you would think that the documentation, you would think that the documents would stop in 1969. What's fascinating to me is that the most heavily classified and top secret documents that I've been able to find are from the last 10 to 15 years. It's not only that they're still collecting these UFO documents from around the world, there's intelligence from many different countries through the Middle East, Asia, Europe, everywhere. So not only do you see that, but you also see that this is considered heavily classified. It is a very top secret subject. Whatever UFOs really is to the U.S. government, it is 100% probably the most classified topic that I've looked into, even past almost any conspiracy you can think of.
Mm. Now, when you say they are classified documents, I thought they had to be declassified for even getting through with the Freedom of Information Act.
That's absolutely right, and that's a great question. What happens through the Freedom of Information Act is you can request a classified document. What will happen to make it releasable to you if they don't just withhold it 100% is that they will redact or black out the information. Hmm. What that does is it takes away the top secret status because they essentially redacted all of that top secret information. So then the blacked out documents becomes considered declassified or then has an unclassified status, and then they'll send it out to people like me. So what I get is a blacked out piece of paper. And in some cases, and if you log on to theblackvault.com and go into the UFO section, the documents that were obtained from the Defense Intelligence Agency, the most recent one, some of those documents are literally blacked out from top to bottom. There's not a single single word that you can read. It's just they black it all out. And you would think that they wouldn't even waste the tree, you know,
right,
that they wouldn't waste the paper to send these documents out, and yet they do. For whatever reason, they'll still give you the document. They just black it out 100%.
Well, they still charge you for it, right?
Yes, and that's the other irony about it all. Is
there
that
you are.
I pay for a lot of these.
And that's why. So, that's why they'll black it out and send it to you.
That's a good point, so they can make some money from me.
Yeah, send me the money, I'll black everything out and send you a piece of paper. You know?
Yeah, which is too bad and unfortunate that they waste the tree to do it, but, you know, that's one of the many games they play when using the Freedom of Information Act.
And yet there's enough information buried within those blacked-out lines to either prove or lead one to believe that the UFO phenomenon is indeed real. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give us an example.
When you look at the blacked out information as a whole, and you can't read anything, that in itself is a piece of the puzzle.
Right.
That in itself tells you something, that this topic is very classified to the U.S. government, that whatever it is still very real and still is being documented. Now, when you look at the documents that you can read, and that aren't blacked out, you see another story entirely where you'll read about unconventional aircraft that describe maneuvers or describe technology that we don't have today.
Mm-hmm.
One document that sticks out in my mind is a 4-page government document that was obtained from the Defense Intelligence Agency. And I didn't discover this firsthand, meaning I wasn't the one that brought it out into the public. This was out. But my first FOIA request was for this document to prove that it was genuine. And in the UFO field, it's been called the 1976 Iran incident. And in short, a UFO was seen over Iran, and another UFO came out of the bottom of it. A third UFO came out of the side of it. It strategically shut down 2 F-4 Phantom jets. One of the UFOs actually landed on Earth. Highly summarizing 4 pages, but I mean it really showed technology that we don't have. It showed craft and described craft that we don't even have today, or at least, you know, rumored to have today. And this was something that you're able to read from the U.S. government. And so when you take into account, okay, on one hand, I can read this document, shows technology we don't have, this is really amazing. Put that side by side with a document that's 100% blacked out. It makes you wonder, I wonder what's under there. You know, I mean, I want to know what's under there, because if I can read this, what can't I read?
That's right.
And I think that that's really what drives me to keep going with a lot of my research.
You know, we've had Stanton Friedman on the show before, and he's talked about these blacked out lines or blacked out whole pages that are blacked out. But he's found a way to read through them and has published them, and I believe you have too. And so they started whiting them out, and when they could read through those, they started cutting these out. And so you have a big several blank holes in the paper. Do you find that's true?
Well, you know, that's surprising. I have actually not heard that from Stan. I'd be interested to know a little bit more about it. I would think that, you know, with the blacked out material, that is a frequently asked question to me. Is there a way to look through that? Now, if Stan found a different way, I'd be very interested in that. But when you talk about photocopied pages, the photocopy process is two-dimensional, so you're not going to get multiple layers. And if they do their job of heavily blacking out the material, once they photograph that, it won't show up in a two-dimensional photocopy. Now, if you had the original blacked-out material, there may be a way to separate the inks, but we never get that. Now, again, I fully trust Stan and been friends with him for quite some time. I've never heard that story, so I'd be interested to hear more. But he's absolutely right about the whiting out, too. And when you photocopy that, that's a heck of a lot easier to determine how much is blacked, a quote-unquote blacked out or redacted. Mm. So it's not black anymore. It's not as easily seen. And so when you look at these documents, it may just look like a partial typewritten page, when in reality, three-quarters of it whited out.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting, the tactics they play, and the whiteout is definitely one of them.
All right. Now, you've told a story before about how you secured highly classified documents from the Canadian government. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Sure. It's kind of an interesting story that ties into current day and present day investigations into the UFO phenomena. And when I was seeing all these documents and the documentation on UFOs and UFO sightings from around the world, even in our own country, I knew there had to be something on the books that instructed the military and instructed the government on how to report these UFOs. And so what I did was I found an Air Force manual 10-206. And in this Air Force manual, this specifically stated, and this was United States Air Force, this wasn't, you know, any type of, world publication or anything like that, because there are kind of joint publications and manuals that are used by the Canadian government and United States governments. This was specific to the U.S. Air Force.
Mm.
And in it stated certain things to report. They were called service reports, CIRVIS. I mean, the government is full of acronyms. But this one stands for Communication Instructions for Reporting Vital Intelligence Sightings. In short, this manual was talking about seeing either unidentified aircraft or a missile streak across the sky or a select few other things and how to report them. But in this list was unidentified flying object. Now, whatever that UFO is, we don't know. We can only assume, well, it's an unidentified flying object. That doesn't mean extraterrestrial. I don't jump to that conclusion ever when I see UFO, but it was interesting to see that terminology, because going along lines of what we first talked about, the military doesn't look into quote-unquote unidentified flying objects.
Right.
They would really lift a whole lot of secrecy from themselves and a whole lot of finger-pointing about the conspiracy if they just simply said, yeah, we look into them, we don't believe they're extraterrestrial, but we want to make sure we're safeguarding the country. And then a lot of us would just really kind of go, oh, okay, well, that's great. You know, that's it. But they don't. They're so adamant about saying they're not interested. So I found this manual. It's on the books now. Anybody can look it up. And it said unidentified flying objects in to be reported. So thumbing through the manual, you find out where these reports are being sent to. And they're being sent to the NORAD installation. Not a big shock. I mean, they monitor incoming missiles and stuff like that. So, of course, if something gets seen in the sky or even in near space, they're the ones to know about it.
Right.
And so I filed a request to NORAD, and wouldn't you know that NORAD is not subject to the United States Freedom of Information Act. They won't take a FOIA request. It's only one of two places that I've seen in the government and military that won't take a request. And they said in good faith that they would look for these types of reports. And again, I specifically mentioned them. I said they're filed under this publication. They're called service records, and, you know, they deal with UFOs. And I said, those are the ones that I want. And they said in good faith they would look for the records. And, of course, they found absolutely nothing.
Right.
So about a year goes by, and I realized, number one, why they're not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. That was in their letter. That the reason they're not is they're subject to both U.S. control and Canadian control, and so therefore they're not subject to our laws. So that I knew right away. What I didn't realize was that the answer to my question and to solve this riddle was in that sentence, the fact that the Canadian government was also in command at the NORAD installation. So I made a phone call. I called the Department of National Defense, and that's kind of the Canadian equivalent of our Department of Defense. And he had no idea who I was. I didn't call anybody specifically. It was just the guy who answered the phone. And I said, hi, I'm curious, you know, can a American citizen request under what's called the Access to Information Act? Again, they had an equivalent to our Freedom of Information Act, so I wanted to see if I could use it. And he kind of hummed and hawed a little bit, and he says, well, if the documents have been released before, I don't see why not. And I said, well, okay, so let me tell you what I'm looking for. And so I start to describe it, and I say, I'm looking for these reports. They're called service reports. And before I could ever get out of my mouth that they had to do with UFOs and what they were involved with, he says, oh, yeah, I have them right here. And I thought to myself, okay, well, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, this guy literally had them within arm's reach.
Wow.
And so I said, oh, okay. And he says, yeah, I like to keep these things handy, whatever that meant. So I didn't want to become too inquisitive and all of a sudden turn into Fox Mulder because I wanted to get a copy of these things. So I asked just that. I said, how can I obtain a copy of them? And he says, do you have a Visa card? And I said, well, absolutely, sure. And now I'm thinking, oh, God, this guy's going to charge me, you know, $700 for these documents. And he ended up charging me about $3.50. You know,
wow.
The best $3.50 I've ever spent.
I guess.
And there were about 100 pages. And a couple weeks later, I got the whole stack. It was about 100 pages or so. And in fact, they're online now. You can go onto the blackvault.com. They're in the UFO section. But they were all these service reports. They were all on UFOs. There is even a couple on crop circles, believe it or not. Not that that was listed in the manual to report. But I just found it, you know, pretty amazing that NORAD said in good faith that they searched for these documents and found absolutely nothing. And through the Canadian government, you're able to continue to prove the lie because all of these documents have to be channeled through or housed at NORAD. Even though the guy at the DND had them, the Department of National Defense had them, that didn't matter. The existence of these service reports proves that NORAD installation is on the receiving end, and yet they will bold face lie in writing and say, well, we haven't collected these things since 1969.
So the
reports in itself, very interesting. You know, they're your normal UFO reports. You're not going to find any, you know, extraterrestrial confirmation.
Right.
But what it does do is it adds another piece to the puzzle to prove the U.S. military is absolutely covering this topic up, and you have to ask why.
Right. We're going to have to take a quick break right here for a non-commercial break, I might add. But stick around, John, because we're going to be right back to you. And need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Mr. John Greenwald, Jr. of the Black Vault Radio Network and the Black Vault website, where you can find out a heck of a lot on government involvement with UFOs. So we're going to be right back, so stick around, please.
Do you already have prior experience and knowledge that could translate into part of a degree? Would you like to save time and money? How about earning a degree in a shorter amount of time? If so, the college-level examination program at Henry Ford Community College can help you. CLEP Credit helps you to fulfill graduation requirements by allowing you to move past introductory coursework and onto more challenging courses. CLEP exams are offered in 30 subjects, covering courses in literature, science and math, foreign languages, history and social sciences, as well as business. So if you'd like to fast-track your college education with your prior knowledge, call 313-317-6608 to schedule an exam or find out more about course equivalencies. That's 313-317-6608.
This is Mr. Wayne of the Next Level Radio Show, playing the best sounds in techno. You smell that? F-U-N-K. Funk. So check me out every Monday night from midnight till 2 a.m. And take your shoes off and come tap your toes. Here on the only station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Energy hog to team. Get in that house and waste some energy.
It's got leaky windows
and no insulation.
Energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's wasted.
The wash is not Energy Star rated.
You have the power to get rid of energy hogs.
Someone's home.
And he's got energy efficient light bulbs.
Go to energyhog.org for fun games and lots of hog busting tips.
Energyhog.org. Get out of there.
Wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
This is WHFR.FM, station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. John Greenwald of the Black Vault. And just to reiterate, John, we were talking about the Canadian government. The Canadian, make this so that I get this straight. The Canadian government gets documentation from our DOD or our government, and their Freedom of Information Act is more lax than ours. Am I getting this straight?
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much. The clarification, though, is that they're not necessarily getting it from our Department of Defense. What those documents proved was that an installation that they're partially in command of is getting documents from us, and that the service reports are also filed under a Canadian publication, a joint Canadian and U.S. publication called JANAP 146. Mm-hmm. It pretty much states the same exact thing. And all the publications, all the manuals say send all your UFO reports to NORAD. So it's not like the DOD is handing them over to the Canadian government. Mm-hmm. I just kind of went through the back door to prove that that agency was getting the UFO records. And so, just wanted to clarify that, but it absolutely showed me that the UFO topic is obviously even global, but still very real and still being reported, and the U.S. government is still finding a way to lie about it, or a reason to lie about it anyway.
Well, some of these documents that you got from Canada mentioned, or were from the U.S., or mentioned the cases in the U.S., is that correct?
Mostly Canada, but there were some that happened in like our northern states,
right?
That would cross the border. So yeah, it was going on over U.S. soil as well.
Oh, okay. So obviously, the United States had to know about it, had to be investigating it.
Exactly.
Had to stay on top of it. You know, it's very scary to think that they say we don't investigate, don't bother. If you see something that you can't identify, a craft in the sky you can't identify, don't bother telling us because we don't investigate that, especially after 9/11. How frightening is that? You see something you don't in the sky you're not familiar with, you notify them and say, oh, that if you can't identify it, we're not going to look into it. because we don't investigate that.
Yeah.
What kind of baloney is that?
Exactly. You bring up an excellent point, and to be honest with you, it is very scary. I mean, I wish the government and military would say we absolutely have an interest in these things. They're not extraterrestrial. We don't believe they're alien, but we want to make sure that we're safeguarding the citizens of the United States. That's what their job is. And yet, when you're getting reports from coast to coast about craft that are 100, 200, 300, 400 feet in length, in many cases larger than any aircraft we have known in the sky, doing maneuvers and exhibiting technology that we don't even have, and they go, ah, we looked into it 40 years ago. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me.
And still it's in our sky today.
Yeah.
Still it's in our sky today.
They're obviously not going anywhere. These people are still seeing them. And it's not only civilians. There's a lot of military personnel that are seeing these things all of the time. And they're obviously being reported. We can prove that. They're on the books to be reported. That's easy to prove. Mm-hmm. What happens to the documents and the cases after they're reported? That's the big mystery. Yeah. And, you know, I think to tack on also to the scary comment, in that, you know, dealing with so many different conspiracies and secrets and classified topics, the UFO topic is the number one hardest subject and topic to research. And when I look into nuclear weapons and biological weapons and even chemical testing on humans without their knowledge that we've done in the past, I can get information on that easier than I can getting UFO documents. Huh. That in itself, I think, proves a lot about this topic. There is definitely something there.
Yeah, they say that the UFO topic is more highly classified than the H-bomb. At least I said that back when the H-bomb was highly classified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe that it's still true to this day. Maybe during Blue Book that was the case, and maybe they'll even admit to it now. I'm not real sure, but when it comes to even just today, I think that that statement still holds true. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something there that the government doesn't want us to see. And but, I think that a lot of people turn a blind eye to it, and they shouldn't. You know,
why?
I mean, the media mocks this topic like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. There's not a lot of serious investigations. I mean, I try my best. It's one of my motivations to get into television production because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted people to see the real truth behind what the UFO researchers are coming out with, what the investigations are telling us, and that's what brought me into, like, History Channel documentaries and so on, because there really is something there. And unfortunately, the public just doesn't get to see a lot of it.
Right. Well, UFO Hunters is definitely reaching the public. You know what the viewership is on that?
I don't offhand exact numbers. I know that it's you know, more than a million people are watching on the premiere nights, and then of course it airs all the time, you know, in repeats and so on.
Right,
so
right.
You're talking about millions of people throughout every week that are watching these shows at different times. I mean, that's a proven statistic. Right. So the interest is there, and we're trying to do our best with UFO Hunters. We're only one show, we're only one network, but I joined season 3 in hopes to, you know, contribute something strong to the show. I wanted to have, you know, my background, and it's about 13 years now of background into this topic, put that into some of the episodes that I've had the pleasure of producing and writing. So mm-hmm. pretty excited about that, and joined this season, just season 3. I wasn't involved with 1 or 2, and I'm just finalizing my 3rd episode, which will premiere in about 2 or 3 weeks. And my first 2 have already aired and did very well.
Yes, I watch them all the time.
Oh, very good. Well,
I hope others do too, because it is, you know, what I like about UFO Hunters is, you know, they're the majority of these sightings. Let's put it this way: the majority of the sightings, like 80%, are misidentifications. Okay,
right,
and 1 or 2%. Are hoaxes. Now, okay, the majority of them can be explained. It's the other 18-19% that we're interested in. And the mainstream media wants to talk about the 80-82%, the misidentifications, the hoaxes. And
right.
when they can't identify it, they try to give you explanations that don't fit the evidence in the first place. But what UFO hunters does is concentrate on that 18%. And they show the fact it only takes one. If one of these cases are real, then, you know, and if not extraterrestrial, if not other dimensional, then what?
Right.
Right?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think when you look at the cases going back to the U.S. government and the fact that these military pilots and government agents are seeing and are receiving these reports, when I get the documents, it is considered unidentified to that military agency and to that government agency.
Right.
So what the bottom line is, you can rule out so many things right off the top. These aren't top-secret military aircraft being tested. The reason is they wouldn't come up under, you know, these cases wouldn't come up under a request for UFO information.
Hmm.
Government and military does not know what these objects are.
Hmm.
When you talk about, you know, space-based, like a astronomical explanation, a comet, a meteorite, whatever, streaking across the sky, these things are making turns. They're speeding up and slowing down. So you can rule, you know, any of those types of explanations out. Hoaxes, I mean, you know, military documents on hoaxes, that doesn't make any sense. And so it's like, what are you left with? You know, you're not left with a whole lot of other explanation other than maybe the extraterrestrial possibility is very real.
Right, right. And they, a lot of them say, well, this is our technology. These are secret technologies. Fine, you can prove that easily enough. Just tell us when and where and do a flyby. We'll film it and we'll be convinced there's nothing to this UFO business because you've just done a flyby of that very same football-sized silent triangular craft.
Right.
And they say, no, we can't do it because, you know, it's secret. Wait a minute. Didn't you just fly it over all of Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't you just fly it over Stephenville, Texas?
Right.
And if it's one of ours, the one that was flown over Stephenville, Texas, why were there fighter planes chasing it?
That's right.
You know?
Yeah, and that's a key, and I'm glad you brought that up because I'll offer a little bit of a tease to the next episode that I'm currently working on. I can't go into a ton of detail, but...
Oh, come on, John.
One of the...
Come on, John. You can tell us. We're all friends here.
We're all friends, absolutely. Well, one of the cases we deal with is a craft that does not, by physical description and characteristics, does not match up to anything that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it was being chased by fighter jets. And it's believed to be that they were in an attack and engaging formation behind the object with full afterburners. They couldn't catch up. And so we look into the case. There's a video. It hasn't been on television ever. It actually just happened in the last 2 months. And so that's one of the cases we're dealing with. And the episode as a whole deals with what is that military connection between these fighter jets and helicopters and the UFOs, whatever they are. What is that connection? And so we deal with a few cases, but you bring up, you know, you bring up an excellent point that there are these events where you'll see a UFO and it's being chased by fighter jets.
Mm.
Yeah, it could absolutely be an escort formation, but I think the viewers and your listeners will be pretty happy to find out what our results were from the investigation and what the craft possibly is. So,
do you know when
it's,
that's
pretty exciting?
Do you know when that's scheduled to air?
Yeah, I believe it should be the week after next. And the new shows premiere every Wednesday night.
Okay,
my episode title is called First Response. So it may be appearing in the TV guides already if for those of you who have digital cable or satellite dishes, if it goes that forward, it should be the week after next week. And in fact, I'm not sure when your show airs.
This show will air on Saturday, June the 6th.
Oh, okay.
So, but give us the title of it again.
Sure, First Response. So, in fact, when the show airs, the show will already have aired.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we can see it on the web at UFOhunters.com. Is that right?
That's right, yep. History Channel puts up the episodes online, and I know that a lot of them sneak onto YouTube and they go untouched. I know that YouTube doesn't like that, but You'll be able to log on to YouTube and download the episodes as well. So they'll definitely find their way to the internet for sure.
And then summer reruns. Oh yeah, we'll be able to see it. Anybody that is not familiar with it, it's on the History Channel on Wednesday nights, and anybody within my voice all over the world. I don't know if they're you know, in the Middle East or what have you. I doubt it, but anybody that gets the History Channel Wednesday nights and History Channel UFO Hunters, and once again, you can go to the web at UFOHunters.com, and you say YouTube even carries them. Put that in search for UFO Hunters.
Yeah, YouTube, and then the other two shows that I worked on for this season are the one on under. It's called titled Underground Bases. That's what they called it.
Oh yeah.
And primarily, it was all about the Dulce facility.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, Dave. I don't know what your thoughts are on the Dulce facility. I personally did not buy into the whole fact that there was something out there. So I didn't know what this show was going to be about when they handed it to me. And I won't say that I'm convinced that there's these deep, dark operations going on between our military personnel and the aliens in a secret facility in Dulce, New Mexico. But I will say it was pretty bizarre, the stuff we ran into down there. And we had to cut a lot out of the show just for time, unfortunately. But we had some amazing, amazing stories come out, and it was pretty convincing.
Well, maybe you can put that in your next book. What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, it's a book in itself, to be honest with you. I mean, our journey was about 11 days down there. We were invited by the Jicarilla Apache tribe to come onto their land and to shoot on their land, film on their land. And they were an amazing group of people to work with. And when it comes down to it, you would think, oh, they didn't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. And even though it's not the tribe itself does not have an official view, and I want to make sure that that's very clear, the tribe itself does not have a view on this facility. A lot of members of the tribe, and even the Native American elders that we were able to talk to, they had some amazing stories about seeing beings out there and seeing UFOs. I mean, to have contact, that they actually had contact with, you know, what they believed were extraterrestrials.
Right.
And there was something that came up, and unfortunately it wasn't in the show, but there was these amazing stories, and we heard it from more than one people that didn't know each other, about the only way that they were able to describe them were little people, and that they were these little four-foot-tall beings out there in Dulce, and there were more witnesses that we had than we had time to interview out there that have seen these little beings, or these little people as they described them. What they were, we don't know. We have no idea. But it was a pretty amazing story to hear, and we heard it more than once, and in fact probably heard it, you know, 15, 20 times from people, and unfortunately just didn't have the time to interview everyone, and it ultimately got cut out of the show because we only have an hour to deal with all that stuff.
Right.
But it was quite a treat to go down there and talk to everybody.
Yeah, well, it's quite a treat to watch that show, I'll tell you. We're going to have to take one more break and for a non-commercial, and we'll be right back. We need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. John Greenwald of the Black Vault, and we're going to get right back to him right after this. More than 100,000 people in Michigan, 30,000 of which are children. The Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan exists to ensure these individuals and their families receive the resources and support necessary to live normal and productive lives. As the only statewide nonprofit organization that focuses entirely on seizure disorders, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan enhances lives and changes communities by making it easier for people with epilepsy to live in society. Whether through its programs such as Camp Discovery, Living Well with Epilepsy, or Epilepsy Entertainment Gatherings, the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan sets out each day to act as ambassadors for those coping with this condition. For more information regarding these and other programs, volunteer opportunities, or how to donate, feel free to visit the Foundation's website at www.epilepsymichigan.org. The Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. Not another moment lost to seizures.
If you've ever been interested in working in mass media, Henry Ford Community College is the place for you. The Associate in Arts degree in telecommunication is designed for the student interested in the career areas of advertising, public relations, journalism, and program production for radio, television, film, and multimedia. Both classroom academic knowledge and creative skills are combined with real-world assignments and experience so as to provide the student with a head start into the business as well as a solid foundation for the recommended completion of a four-year degree at a transfer institution. For further information, please contact Jay Kornick, lead telecom teacher, at 313-845-6477. Again, that's 313-845-6477.
Listen to The Mrs. Robinson Show, Sundays from 10 until midnight. On The Mrs. Robinson Show, you'll hear the latest in indie pop, indie rock, space rock, garage rock, electronic music, and anything else I feel like playing. And of course, there's going to be a whole lot of Mr. Mark Robinson. So check out The Mrs. Robinson Show with me, Mrs. Robinson, Sundays from 10 until midnight on the station that's making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Yes, do check that out here on WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. Welcome back to We Are Not Alone. I'm Dave Twitchell. We are speaking with Mr. John Greenwald, and John, I wanted to ask you which of the documents that you have on the Black Vault, which of them do you find convinces you the most that our government is still involved in the UFO phenomenon?
Well, I think there's not really one document, but I think quite a few, and so I can answer that a couple different ways. One, I think when you look at the Defense Intelligence Agency stuff that I talked about earlier, when you look at that material, you just go onto the UFO section, and then there's like subcategories, all UFO documents from, and you go in there and it lists all the different agencies. Load up those, and I think that in itself tells you there's something about the UFO topic that they just don't want to talk about. I think that that in itself speaks volumes. And so definitely those documents. When you look at the 1976 Iran incident, the one I highly, highly summarized, and it is worth 5 minutes of your time to read four pages, I think that document in itself sticks out as being one of the top reports that have come out that really does show this UFO topic displays technology we don't have. You know, we're in 2009. This incident happened in 1976. We still don't have the technology that this craft demonstrated. Mm-hmm. You know, we just don't have that. And so to read it in a report that has been sent out by the government, I think is really kind of it's an eye-opener, to be honest with you. Because, again, you look at that document and then you look at the thousands of blacked-out paragraphs and pages in countless other documents throughout all these different agencies, something is there. And I don't think you need to be a rocket scientist to figure out that this topic is not easily explained and it's not a joke, like some of the media wants you to believe. Mm-hmm. The topic is definitely real. Do you 100% sure it's extraterrestrial? I don't know. I haven't seen it to believe it, and the documents aren't going to tell you, but with any investigation, you've got to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And if you want to get to that answer, you got to look at these documents and start putting them together. And I think that if somebody just takes 5-10 minutes, not only reads the 1976 Iran document, but start thumbing through some of the other pages from the National Security Agency or the FBI, just look at some of those documents. The CIA, there's thousands from the CIA on UFOs that to this day are considered top secret. I think anybody will be impressed by it.
Yeah, there was a memo from, speaking of the FBI, there was a memo from Hoover that comes right out and says, now I don't know if this was leaked memo or what, but comes right out and says, you know, there was this crash that they wouldn't give us the crash disk for cursory exam. You know which one I'm talking about?
I do, yeah, and I think that actually, don't quote me, but I think that that is a real one.
Mm-hmm.
And the speculation is, what is he referring to?
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, I believe that is a real document, although I could be mistaken.
Well, some people say he was referring to Roswell, but I believe that time-wise, he was referring to, they shot down one over L.A. Before the war, or right after Pearl Harbor. I can't give you a date now. You know what I'm talking about.
Are you talking about the battle over Los Angeles?
Yeah, the battle over Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they shot one
well,
down.
They didn't get a craft shot down, although they shot at it. But as the document says, it just kind of drifted off back over the ocean and kind of went away. It was like they couldn't damage it.
Mm.
But that's the famous Los Angeles time photograph where all the searchlights are
right.
Beamed up at this object. And, that's an amazing, amazing story. And that is literally my backyard. As you mentioned, I'm in Los Angeles, but that happened in at Fort MacArthur. Those photographs were taken at Fort MacArthur. And that's still, it's a museum now, but it still exists here in Los Angeles. You can go and visit it. And I did a show for History Channel. It was UFO Files, UFOs in the White House.
Mm.
And we talked about, that was our whole opening scene, was recreating what happened during the battle over Los Angeles. I believe it was 1942, if memory serves me well. And they absolutely thought it was the Japanese. They weren't sure what it was.
Right.
And this huge craft shows up, and they start firing at it. And they caused a lot of destruction. This actually isn't as well known as the case itself, but as they shot up at this thing, all of the shrapnel and all of these unexploded ordnances, because not 100% of those things blew when it hit the craft,
right.
Rained down over parts of Long Beach and San Pedro out there, and that's where these ordnance were found. So caused a lot of damage on cars. I think there was a couple injuries that were reported, so it was a big event and something they definitely covered up for quite a while.
And one or two heart attacks as well.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So, you know, if it is E.T., they're coming over saying, you know, we don't mean you any harm, but you're sure kicking your own butts over here, you know, because you're so afraid of us. And maybe that's why, and I think originally, you know, I've written a book, too, about the implications of the UFO reality. And in it, I say it started out with a fear of panic. They were afraid that our nation would panic, the world would panic, if they knew that we're not alone in the universe. But in actuality, it's our government and our military who were panicking and have been panicking all these years, in my humble opinion. What do you say?
No, I think you're right. I mean, the biggest cliche question is, well, why don't they land on the White House lawn and show themselves? And I think the answer is simply, well, we'll shoot at it.
That's
exactly what the military and government would do, is that they are fearful of this. This is technology that is obviously far beyond our own. And so what are we going to do? Well, we're going to be really stupid and try and shoot at it. And it sounds like laughable and it sounds like a science fiction flick. But I'm telling you, that's probably what would happen, because there would be no peaceful meeting of the minds. I mean, look at our own world. We can't even get along with most of the countries that we are, quote-unquote, friends with and allies with, and there's all this behind-the-scenes fighting and slapping and so on. So I think that that you're absolutely right. I think that, unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to handle them landing on the White House lawn or, you know, landing anywhere else for that matter.
With all their advanced technology, they're probably more afraid of us than we are of them. What do you think?
Well, it's quite possible, but I think when it comes down to it, they're going to have technology that is so far beyond our own. We could shoot at it all we want, but we're not going to touch it.
Right.
You know, we're not going to hurt it. You know, they can. We are the anthill in the middle of Africa for them. We are not a threat. I mean, think about our technology and the amazing achievements we've been able to accomplish. And I'm a big fan of what we've been able to accomplish. I'm very proud to say my dad recently retired, but worked on the space shuttle for many, many years, and pretty much since the beginning. My grandfather worked in the beginning infant stages, which led to the space program.
Hmm.
Worked on the Bell X-1 and the Bell X-5 aircraft. And, you know, I have a proud heritage when it comes to that. But that being said, we are still very, very immature. And so when that technology, which is very, very impressive to us, look at another civilization who can just dance around the stars like it's nothing.
Right.
Our guns, missiles, and even nuclear weapons, they'd be like, what is that? You know, it's spitballs to them. And so, yeah, I mean, fear of us, I see your point, and it's definitely an excellent one. I just think in my own humble opinion, I think that when it comes down to it, would they even care about us to stop it all?
Right.
And I think that's a big question.
Right.
I did a show for Discovery Channel on First Contact, and I'm telling you, one of the most amazing interviews I ever did was sitting down with Dr. Michio Kaku. And, you know, he and I talked off camera and on camera, and, you know, to hear him talk about how First Contact could happen in so many different ways, but when it comes down to it, it could absolutely mean that we're looking out with our telescopes and we see them passing in our neighborhood, and that's first contact. They won't care to turn around and look our direction, you know, because we literally are that anthill in the middle of Africa. I mean, how many of us care? I personally do. I'm a geek. I love that kind of stuff. But how many people that walk around day after day really care about an anthill in the middle of Africa? They wouldn't.
You know,
they would just walk right on by it. They wouldn't care to go destroy the colony and prove themselves. They would just walk right on by.
That's right.
So I think that it's a show in itself, Dave. I don't mean to get off on a tangent, but
no,
you know, that's one that I have in my mind. It's like, well, I'm not convinced 100%. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen something yet to prove it to me. But dealing with the debate in my own mind, I can't stray away from the fact that would they care about us? Are we intelligent enough to even be a mark on their radar screen?
Right. But I think that it gives second thoughts to getting out of their craft, and given their physiology there, they would be kind of afraid that we would kill them if they didn't stay in their craft, don't you think?
Right. And again, I feel like such a kind of, I have no other word but a geek about this stuff, because I've lived in not only the UFO stuff for 13 years, but the last 18 months or so in production. This is what I've drowned my brain in. But one of the other big questions to consider is, when they step out of that craft, are they going to be biological?
Mm.
And in a show I did for History Channel called The Universe, we dealt with all different biological life forms. But at the very end of the show, I created a planet with silicon-based life forms that would we merge with our machines. And what's amazing is that a lot of our experts, a lot of our top scientists in this world believe that when first contact is made, or when they come here, if they do, it will be a machine. And that in itself is just a mind-blowing thing to consider.
Yes,
but
it is.
It's one that is it's a hot topic right now in the scientific community.
Mm. John Greenwall, where can we go to get some more look at these documents that we're talking about?
Yeah, well, you can log on to theblackvault.com. I encourage everybody, free community, definitely join. You can click on the FOIA document at the very top. You'll be able to log on, download all of them to your heart's content. And you mentioned the radio show, blackvaultradio.com. A lot of the radio shows, in fact yours, is syndicated. I do apologize, I'm a little behind with getting shows up. My schedule's been absolutely insane. But all the shows, definitely, if they're not updated already, are going to be very shortly. And I'm one guy. I hate to use that as an excuse, but it's
a
crazy schedule.
I know. Well, as long as you keep that UFO Hunters going, because that's a great show. We've had Bill Burns on this show in the past, and hope to have him on again, and we hope to have you on again in the future.
Sounds good. Well, I'm always here. I appreciate it, Dave. It's been awesome.
Very good. John, thank you very much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we'll hope to get back to you again. Okay? Have
Sounds
a good,
good
one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. That's dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. And click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at blackfaultradio.com, as we've just been talking about, as well as on my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And please stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is Dave Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Good morning to you.